ladies and gentlemen, it was early 90s when Turkmenistan signed its first contract to export its energy resources. On one hand, to Europe via Trans-Caspian pipeline. On the other hand, to South Asia via Afghanistan. So far, none of these projects has been realized. Then later, we had Russia suspending its gas import from Turkmenistan. But Ashgabat found China and Iran as an alternative market. Today, we will talk about 20 years of Turkmenistan's effort to diversify its energy exports and how successful it has been. To talk about this, I have my colleague Bruce Panier, who's a Central Asia specialist and editor at Radio Free Europe, Dr. Lukanchinsky, lecturer at the Central Asia Studies at the University of Glasgow. Then we have Saliha Kaya, researcher at the Foundation for Political, Economic and Social Research in Ankara. Saliha, in one of her colleagues, had recently a very interesting paper on the Turkmenistan and the Azerbaijan's energy export via Turkey. So that's a fascinating report. A few minutes ago, I also had a conversation with Sabit Bagirov, who is the former president of SOCAR, Azerbaijan's energy giant. Although I have our conversation recorded in Azeri language, but he was hesitant to speak in English, so he has excused. Anyway, I'm Mohammed Tahir, director of Turkmenistan Service at Radio Free Europe. So let me begin with a recent development in this subject. In my conversation with Dr. Bagirov, I asked him whether he sees President Putin's recent announcement on suspension of South Stream as an opportunity for Turkmenistan and Azerbaijan to export its gas to Europe. His answer was a big yes, first of all. And his reasoning was like there were certain countries in Europe which were relying on gas which was expected to be imported from this pipeline, South Stream pipeline. With the suspension of the project, the need still remains there. So the Europe, he said, will be more focused on alternative. And he said one alternative is Trans-Caspian pipeline. He said previously Europe was very much divided and also not focused on Trans-Caspian because it was engaged, in other hand, with Russia and other countries. Now, he said he was expecting that now Europe will be more focused in this subject. Dr. Luka, let's start with you. Do you agree with the suggestion of former soccer boss in this subject?
Well, yes and no. I think that at the moment, the whole geopolitics of Eurasian gas is going through a time of extreme fluidity. It's changing very fast. And what we're seeing, especially in the latest month of 2014, is the real impact of Crimea on this specific issue. Of course, the fact that the Russian economy is faltering and there are issues in long term with Gazprom has finally had an impact on the actual politics of how the gas from Central Asia is exported towards the West or the East. The latest discussion about, you know, we just heard about South Stream is just, I think, on the cake, if you want, of all this extreme fluidity that we have. I personally would be hesitant to commit to one way or the other. I think that we will see more changes going on in the next few months. But there is one thing which is now fairly clear, is that Turkmenistan now has to find another route to export the gas. Total dependency on China, given the Gazprom decision not to import anymore, and Iran's more hesitant, if you want, attitude towards the gas ties with Turkmenistan, has put the Berdi Muhammadov regime in the corner. They now have to find another route. The direction, we can discuss about the direction, but about the fact that the China-centered pipeline won't be the last, the only one, I think is pretty sure that something's going to happen.
Dr. Luka, you don't think Trans-Caspian is one direction in this case, do you?
I don't particularly see that thing happen. I think it's too complicated. There are too many planets that have to align at the Caspian. I think that the legal status of the Caspian is sort of complicated and yet to be resolved. I think that there are security issues. I think there are funding issues. I somehow think that TAPI could be a more likely, although equally probably difficult, route for Turkmenistan. I think that TAPI seems to be more feasible project. I think that the situation in Afghanistan, although it's still very far from being stable, is somehow more conducive to the establishment, to the construction of this pipeline. And again, I see a clear intention on the regime in Ashgabat to that. If I just may add something, mm-hmm. I always thought that the regime in Ashgabat, the Turkmenistan, had got a very interesting policy about pipelines. They always commit to everything, but in the end, their intention is always clear on one. So there are a couple of smokescreen pipelines that they flaunt around. You know, in the 90s, was all about the Trans-Caspian again, and even the Japan pipeline. If you remember one stage, they talked about that.
Yeah.
But then in the end, it turned out to be China. I think at the moment, Turkmenistan is speaking with everyone. We saw that Nazarbayev was yesterday in Turkmenistan. Not long ago, Bedi Muhammadov was in Turkey, speaking with the phone with Putin all the time, Afghanistan. So they still sort of have this, if you want, multi-vector or multi-directional export route. But in the end, their intention is probably only focused on one. And my hunch is that that could be TAPI.
Right. I have my own opinion about TAPI in Trans-Caspian projects here. But let me bring Saliha Kaya here. What is your opinion, Saliha, about the future of Trans-Caspian pipeline? Obviously, Turkey is one of the potential customer here.
Well, firstly, I'm not talking about technical knowledge because you know that. Firstly, I have to summarize the context. We have to underline that Turkmenistan holds the world's fourth largest reserve of natural gas, and we know that natural gas production of Turkmenistan increases because of development on technology. And but Turkmenistan exports large sum of its natural gas to China, Russia, Iran, and post-Soviet countries. And when we look at the European sites, they need to alternative resources, and they try to save themselves from the Russian hegemony in energy. In the Central Asia countries, Turkmenistan appears willing to play a key actor at the natural gas resources. This is now set. When we compare them, European countries want to reduce their dependence on Russia gas imports, and Turkmenistan must export their natural gas to European countries. Already, where is the Turkey at this point? When we look at the map, Turkey is located between East and West countries, and Turkey is ready to deliver Turkmenistan natural gas to consumers in Europe. And Turkey's energy policy is evolving in this direction. And lastly, EU countries support the Trans-Caspian gas pipeline, and it's expected to be connected with the Southern Gas Corridor, and you know that Southern Gas Corridor is to become the first ever energy line connecting the Caspian to Europe. And also, old president, our president, Abdullah Gül, and the new president, Erdogan, support this connection. And he said that we want to deliver of Turkmenistan natural gas to Europe, and we are Turkey's condition.
Right. Bruce, you just came from the gathering of Central Asians. Your opinion is important on this subject. So what do you see about the future of the Caspian Sea in the light of what President Putin has just said about the South Stream?
Well, you know, of course, the Trans-Caspian has been discussed for many, many years. You know, certainly, I think the effort on the part of the European Union to see it realized will probably increase in the coming months. You know, I've heard the argument before that the problem with Europe getting gas from Turkmenistan was that the situation was never critical enough in Europe for the political will to be behind building a Trans-Caspian pipeline. That said, at times when the relations between the European Union and Russia were certainly more favorable than they are now, Russia still objected to the construction of a Trans-Caspian pipeline. Luca mentioned that there's some serious legal issues about the Caspian Sea right now that are still unresolved after all these years. So while technically it's not very difficult to build a Trans-Caspian pipeline, if the money's there and if we have all the contractors, it's not such a long distance. The problem is going to be now that with the current relationship between Russia and the EU, and not just the Russia and the EU, but also Iran and the European Union and the United States, but I'll speak first about Russia, is that you can expect that Russian opposition to the Trans-Caspian pipeline is going to be more severe and more energetic than it ever was before. If we flip this over, Iran is another country that's objected to the Trans-Caspian pipeline. Now, they were hoping to get a little more out of these last negotiations than they did in the end. And I think, if it looked like the negotiations over the nuclear project were going to go ahead a little faster and the easing of sanctions, Iran might be a little more receptive to hearing talks about the Trans-Caspian pipeline. But as the situation is now, I think that the resistance from Moscow and Tehran would probably be more fierce now than it ever has been to construction of a Trans-Caspian pipeline.
Yeah, I just gave that question, Bruce, to Sabit Bagirov, the former president of SOCAR. He was in contact with the top Turkmen leadership, and obviously he had a discussion with them, and he had some insight when answering that question. When I put that question to Mr. Bagirov, saying that the Trans-Caspian pipeline, if it is not implemented so far, it was because of the Russian opposition, citing the illegal states of Caspian Sea or the ecological issues that Russia was rising time to time on when it comes to Trans-Caspian pipeline project. So when Russia is already in battle with Europe about the energy, how Russia is going to allow Turkmenistan and Azerbaijan to export its gas to Europe. But he said that in the past, there was not a serious political will on behalf of Europe to have that project implemented. Since now, they are in need of that. They are desperately trying to diversify its energy imports other than Russian markets. So now he thinks is the time for Europe, which might come forward with some serious proposals to Turkmenistan and Azerbaijan. In the meantime, he said, in terms of technicality, to implement a project in Caspian Sea, it does not involve territory of any other country. I mean, although the boundaries of the Caspian Sea is not marked at this moment, but he says everybody knows that the pipeline will be passing through the area which theoretically belongs to these two countries. I mean, obviously there is a Russian pressure, and then also there is an increasing demand on European side. And in that case, his opinion was this is the time, but only Europe needs to be more strong in what they want about this project. This was my own input, actually. If there's anyone who wants to add something or has an opposing opinion, I'm open for that before we get into other export directions.
No, I just would like to really say one thing. Yeah. That there has been a bit of a change, if you want, in the last month in European EU policy towards Central Asia, in the sense that, as you know, the new representative came in, you know, Federica Mogherini, and a couple of leaders, namely the Italian Prime Minister Matteo and the Czech President Zeman, went to Central Asia. I haven't heard anyone saying anything about good governance, but I heard everyone speaking about energy, which set the clock back 15 years, you know, before 10 years before 2007. And in that sense, that could be consistent with what you just say, Mohammed. Yeah.
And I suppose I'll jump in here real quick, too, that I understand the Azerbaijani, especially the Azerbaijani side, that will say that this pipeline is going to go across, you know, on the bottom of the sea that's only going to pass under territorial waters of Azerbaijan and Turkmenistan. It's nobody else's business what goes on. You know, we've mentioned a lot of times the ill-defined status of the Caspian Sea. So Azerbaijan and Turkmenistan and the European Union make the argument that it's nobody else's business where they lay the pipeline, and everyone should just stay out of it. And they can, the counter argument, or if they want to elaborate their argument, they can mention that Kazakhstan and Russia, under the current situation, no country actually should be developing offshore sites in the Caspian Sea. And Russia is a partner in Kazakh projects, and Kazakhstan's a partner in Russian projects in the northern Caspian Sea, which technically violate the agreements that they're citing at the same time. At the end of the day, though, we also got to remember that the Russian Navy is the ruler of the Caspian Sea. and they can cause serious complications for ships that are going out there to, do the construction work in the Caspian Sea by simple things of just holding them up for inspections, you know, to make sure, see what they got on board the vessels and stuff. So there is a possibility to delay this project. I hesitate to say militarily, but in the meantime, under the guise of saying, you know, that we're guarding the Caspian against various smuggling efforts and things like that, we're going to have to take a look at what you got in your ships. And of course, if they find even one thing that's not supposed to be there, they can just tell the ship and the captain to turn around and go back to port.
Right. Saliha Kaya, if you can jump in here. I mean, Turkey is obviously one of the beneficiary if this project goes on, if this project is implemented. Mm-hmm. And Turkey is relatively in a good terms with Russia and also relatively good terms with Azerbaijan and Turkmenistan. Is there a role that Turkey can play in taking this project forward in terms of implementation phase?
Yeah, there's not rules maybe in writing, but the Southern Gas Corridor is a big deal with Azerbaijan and Turkey, and the other times after that, after Southern Gas Corridor, Trans-Caspian gas pipeline withdrew via Turkey, and Turkey supports also these pipelines. And I think we know that, we read that there's no rules about this. There's just policy.
Right,
it's
right.
Not
true. Right. Mm-hmm. Dr. Luca, you just touched on the other direction, the TAPI, and you said comparing to the Trans-Caspian project that might be an easier option. What are the bases which makes you think that this is easier option, Dr. Luca?
Well, if we look at the continuum of the last 25 years of Turkmenistan energy policy, you realize that the condition of absolute dependency from one customer is not something that Ashgabat is seen as a situation of benefit. It's seen as a great detriment.
Oh, yes.
Because they make them really vulnerable to whatever this customer wants to do, especially in terms of price negotiations. So in the last 3 or 4 months, the medium-term perspective for Turkmen export indicates that China in the next 10 years might be, well, the only customer. So that's something which has been taken seriously. I've heard about it, and that is making the Turkmen working harder towards the identification on new routes. The fact that, I mean, it seemed to me that the progress in the TAPI, the establishment of the TAPI framework, is somehow more genuine than the process that we see in the Trans-Caspian pipeline. There have been a number of deals that the countries, states have signed. There have been a number of discussion about the establishment, the actual establishment of the consortium that had to do the actual lay down the work. There is some agreement on the route, and there is also, I think, there has also been a fairly stable agreement on the pricing procedure and on the payment procedure will be paid at the border in that sense, which is one thing that the Turkmen wanted. The only issue at the TAPI situation at the moment is who's going to put the money in. Hmm. And we heard in the last few months that ExxonMobil, Chevron have been sort of withdrawing from the project. We probably will never know why really that happened, but we can speculate and think that there have been some sort of non-transparent issue going on since the beginning. The signals are there that there might be some Chinese company investing into it. That for me would be the thing that would get the project started sooner rather than later. The big question, of course, is always stability in Afghanistan. Your service, Mohammed, has done a fantastic job in reporting the trouble at the border between Turkmenistan and Afghanistan. Well, TAPI does not go to that region. Sure. It goes further down the track, which should make the situation a little bit easier. The Turkmenistan will have to make some deals with whoever rules the part of Afghanistan that goes through it's crossed by the pipeline, and so we'll have Pakistan. So I think that although talking about TAPI being an easy prospect is really an exaggeration, it's always very complicated. I think that between the two, so the eastward, if you want, route is the more likely to happen. But there is something which I think that everyone would like to agree about, is that Turkmenistan is now in desperate position to find a new export pipeline for its gas.
Yeah, that is obviously, Dr. Luca. In the recent meeting, I believe last month, the participating nations has also actually reiterated commitment to start the implementation phase of the project by 2015. I think that's the news came out from Ashgabat during the last meeting. And again, some Indian newspapers were also reporting that the countries have also agreed that the French company Total will be leading the implementation phase of the project. So far, most of the news are coming out from outside of Turkmenistan. We don't know what is going on inside of Turkmenistan. But again, you touched upon, Dr. Luca, about the security situation in Afghanistan. Although in the northern areas of Afghanistan, bordering Turkmenistan is not in a good situation in terms of security nowadays. But again, Dr. Luca, this pipeline is going to pass from Kandahar. And also it has to go through Quetta of Balochistan of Pakistan. Again, do you really think that in coming years the security will improve and that this pipeline can be implemented?
Look, I don't know the terrain, so I don't know the actual route. But I can agree with you, it's not going to be an easy feat. Hmm. That's for sure. The situation probably will deteriorate. But I think that, I somehow see the planets aligning, I don't even exclude the fact that might be localized deals, which we never hear about it, with local powers that allow this thing to go through. I see too much of an interest on the Pakistani side, the Indian side, and on the Turkmen side. So, in that sense, the buyers and the seller are very keen to get this thing started. So I think that what they're trying to do at the moment is trying to get to put pressure onto Afghanistan to try to improve the even if it's just talking about the localized situation of specific deals at provincial level, that's something which I could see happening. And of course, having this thing done quickly would make everything easier, because if you engage in protracted multi-stakeholders negotiation, then everyone wants to have their share of the pie, and then becomes complicated. So also the ADB, Asian Development Bank, is part of this deal. It's not that they got the magic wand, they make everything happening just because they want to, but it seems to me that could be seen as an indicator that this project is taken seriously at a different level. One more thing before I finish. You remember that there has been talking about Gestapo even during the 1990s and early 2000s. Niyazov did meet with his counterparts at the time to talk about Tapi. But if you look at how Turkmenistan spoke about Tapi then, and now the elite is speaking about it now, you really see that there is some clear distinction between what was then just part of the usual smokescreen policy of critical infrastructure that they have, and what is now seems to me a more geopolitically vital priority, which is the building of a new route. And sanctions, both the Russians one and the Iranian one, are critical to understand this. Turkmenistan's energy policy at the moment is sandwiched between the relaxation of the Russian sanction and the persistence of the Iranian one. Whichever gets relaxed first, that would determine the direction where the gas goes for me.
Right. Bruce, we worked together about lots of stories which involve security in Afghanistan together here with you. Dr. Luca's statement and also his point of some sort of arrangement in a localized level to guarantee the security of this pipeline, that might be an option to go forward?
I agree with that wholeheartedly. In fact, I think that's the only way this pipeline is ever going to get built, given the situation on the ground, which is unlikely to change significantly in the next couple decades, actually, is that It's an agreement that has to start with at the top level between the leadership of all these countries. But when you get down to it, you're probably going to be dealing with tribal leaders, dozens perhaps, on the ground, who are going to have to sign on to protect the segment of the pipeline that runs through their territory. Now, of course, that's probably going to mean some kind of remuneration for their cooperation in the project. That said, we have to remember that a lot of people think that the Taliban are probably going to get, and we know that they're active in a lot of these regions, even where the pipeline is going to go. Pakistan's role will be critical because everyone knows that they do, in fact, have influence over what the Taliban does. As far as the bankrolling of it, I would also point out, too, that the CNPC has expressed interest in participating in this project, too. I'm not sure what China's interest would actually be in the end for this thing, but they have also come forward and said that they might be interested in it. So maybe they're going to be the ones that are going to help pay off some of the local leaders. But I think unless it's going to be a very complicated deal, you know, the technical aspect of it, of laying the pipeline, is not so difficult. But you're going to have reliable people on the ground that you're dealing with who are going to be able to say, for the 60 kilometers that the pipeline passes through my territory, I can guarantee the security of it. And they're going to have to guard it. And, of course, we know there's a lot of rivalries within Afghanistan. So, you know, that's another thing you have to figure out. If the leader of one tribe clan decides that he's had a falling out with the neighboring clan, he might sabotage the pipeline in their territory, you know. So it's complicated. It could be possible. If people can see the economic benefits for them personally, it would be it would have a lot better chances to be realized if people could see that they were going to get something out of it. But it is going to be, it's diplomatically speaking, it's going to be very complicated.
Dr. Luca, you mentioned that Turkmenistan is concerned of relying only in one export direction, that is, at the moment, obviously, China. Is there this concern is based on something from your point of view?
Well, it shows the limit of the economic foreign policy they pursued so far. We know that there is no effort whatsoever at diversification. The revenues are all coming from imports. The GDP is strongly connected with the gas resources. And also it shows that in Central Asia, that kind of economic development, which you have in the Gulf, is not possible because the geography of the place, the fact that they're all landlocked, does not allow them just not bothering about developing because the gas will always export either to LNG or just the oil put on the ship and shipped elsewhere. So it's the limits of the 25 years of economic development that convince me that that kind of policy is no longer sustainable. And also a couple of examples from the past. I think that the Ukrainian relationship scared Turkmenistan quite a bit. There has been, you know, a couple of times in which they didn't buy it and the GDP fell substantively. Also, the Gazprom pipeline, the Soviet one, the Central Asia Center pipeline, shut down 2008, 2009, I can't remember which one of the two was exactly, but Turkmenistan lost a quarter of the GDP because of that pipeline. And back then, that was the only one, if you, you know, just forget for a second about the tiny one with Iran, the two over there. So I think that the elite has somehow realized that the situation of exclusive dependency on one customer is not sustainable in the long run. And I'm not sure where they expected Gazprom to withdraw. I'm not sure where they expected Iran to be more difficult about that relationship. But it seems to me that the situation has changed in such a way that the 30-35 BCM that they export to the China pipeline are not sustainable in the longer term, even because what happens if China wants to renegotiate the price? That put them in a different, the fact that Turkmenistan export 100% of its gas to China put Beijing in a much stronger position to negotiate the price. So it seems to me that the fact that the economic foreign policy hasn't changed, also the fact that we know that the corruption internal to the state is very much based on the possibility of siphoning off money from the gas revenues. It seemed to me that stability, which remains the key objective of foreign policy, or the regime in particular, will be damaged if the situation changed. So I can see that they are looking for a different export route. And again, I do not think that they will go for a route that will antagonize Russia. Mm. The ties between the states are too important. Putin has, and this is actually what Bruce wrote last week about China, the limits of China influence. Like, Russia does go beyond those limits. Russia has demonstrated that they want to have sympathetic leaders in Central Asia that they can do business with, you know. I don't think that Turkmenistan is keen to antagonize Russia, and realistically, building a pipeline in conjunction with Azerbaijan, with which traditionally they have not very good relationships either. So it's not that that's a great friendship going on forever. Well, if you want. So again, it's talking about Tapi as an easier fit, as I said before, is a euphemism. It's extremely complicated and will entail deals made at different levels, and they can actually have to be reinvigorated on a year-to-year basis, because if the warlords can say, well, we want to change things again, and that's happening, possible. But I think that is still the most likely route, especially if Iran definitely pulls out of the deals with Turkmenistan, which last summer was, you know, talk of the day everywhere. But again, the situation with Iran, this energy cul-de-sac, I call it, is the outcome of 25 years of extremely regime-centric economic foreign policy, failure of diversification, and ultimately the reliance of a relatively small elite on the patronage that you can get by corruption, and that's it.
Mm-hmm. Bruce, having written a very nice piece, Dr. Luca just mentioned about Chinese presence in Central Asia last week. I'm sure you obviously want to say something about the future role of China in Turkmen energy market. If you feel so, feel free to talk about this. But my question was, we know that Turkmenistan doesn't want to rely too much on one energy market. That's in this case China. And also the other directions are at the moment very difficult to implement, like TAPI or the Trans-Caspian pipeline. So my question is, Bruce, the old brother, Russia is a potential market here for Turkmenistan to diversify its energy routes?
You know, I would have to rule Russia out. The gas relationship between Russia and Turkmenistan has been very, very complicated for many, many years. I can remember when the sticking point was that the Turkmen Niyazov and the Turkmen government didn't feel that Russia was paying enough money for the gas they were getting from Turkmenistan. It was much lower priced then. I think that they wanted them to raise it to $40 per 1,000 cubic meters from 32. So that was a while back. But they had a number of problems, and the other one was, of course, Russia has the biggest reserves of gas and is a major, obviously a major gas exporter itself. So you're not going to get a great deal from Russia anyway. Russia doesn't need the gas, so it's basically a re-exporting country at that point. And they're not going to give Turkmenistan a great deal because they're also a competitor at the same time. And this is one of the problems Turkmenistan ran into in the 90s, where they were exporting gas via Russian pipelines, but Russia sold the gas sent that gas to Ukraine, Georgia, places like that that couldn't really pay for it. And there was times where the debt was, $1 billion from, for Turkmen gas from these countries, which doesn't sound like a lot today, but was a huge amount for the Turkmen government in the 1990s. And they just couldn't get payment. So that's going to be something that I'm sure the current Turkmen government won't forget. If I was to put a bet on, it would be hard to say which one of these pipelines Turkmenistan would go for first, but I think the key thing will be which pipeline shows progress being built. If the Turkmen government can see that The pipeline to Europe, a pipeline to Europe or a pipeline to Pakistan and India has actually started construction, then that would be the one that they're going to throw their weight behind immediately. You know, in an ideal situation, they will export both to Europe and via TAPI. But I would think that right now they're getting, you know, I agree with Luca 100% that they're getting into a very dangerous situation where they're going to have one buyer. And no one is really sure what the price of gas is that they're selling to China right now. But I mean, I've seen reports that said as low as $195 per 1,000 cubic meters, which is about half of what the world market price is right now. So, you know, they don't want to be in a situation where China says, "Look, we're the only game in town, and we're paying $100, or we're just gonna, you know, we'll just talk to Russia and increase exports from them instead." That would be, if I was going to put a bet, I would say whoever starts construction first or shows that they're moving fastest, Ashgabat will throw all its attention behind that pipeline, realizing that this is the alternative route that they've been looking for, and it is going to get built.
Well, we don't know in who will that party be, who will start the implementation process first. In this case, my conclusive question is, whether the diversification of energy export in terms of Turkmenistan is possible.
You, in terms of direction, you mean?
Yeah.
Or in terms of...
Yeah, in terms of direction.
Oh, well, it will have to be. It will have to be. I agree with Bruce. They no longer see that... I mean, and that's the main change of Eurasian gas transit in the post-Crimea years, that is no longer dominated by a Cold War, if you want, dimension. You either go that way or you go that way. Multidirectionality is actually possible. You can have same countries exporting in different directions. So I agree with Bruce. They're not going to be saying, well, we're going to go TGCP, and we're not going to go TAPI. They got the capacity, the political intention of export both ways. Of course, these are probably the most difficult routes ever. Also because Turkmenistan borders with major producers like Iran. So geographically, it needs to be a long-range, far-flung enterprise, which makes things extremely difficult. But we saw this also in the other kind of infrastructure, like the railways and the freeways that Turkmenistan is part of. They committed at the beginning, and then somehow they get out the projects, which gets slowed down, so they always keep that sort of obscure, very opaque aptitude, which I don't see happening again in the case of gas infrastructure. Yeah. The regime is now committed to diversification, and they're not going to really be picky about which one is going to happen first, but they will back both, either of them or both of them, really, for this instance, in with whatever strength they have. Also because the kind of prices that Bruce mentioned about, you know, with China, which is half of the world price, turn the clocks back to Soviet time, when Turkmenistan, in the Soviet Union, of course, was artificial trade. But when Turkmenistan got out of the USSR, they got the biggest advantage of all Soviet republics because their gas starts to get priced up a world market. Now, if you look at 25 years, they revert back to what used to be the Soviet case, and they trade well below world markets. It's not sustainable in Turkmenistan, even because this has shown the limits of rentier development in Central Asia. It's no longer sustainable. We see it in Kazakhstan as well, where, you know, a sort of situation, you know, in Kashagan has put the regime at trouble. So I think that time for at least export diversification is now come. Economic diversification, you mean a utopia in the region, but that for another day.
Sure. Obviously, Bruce, again, I want to come back to you here. And we also did not mention about there was another dream project. Another pipeline will be taking a Turkmen gas through Afghanistan, Tajikistan, in China. But again, we don't know when the construction will start, when it will end, and if it is implemented, it's also expected that it will deliver some part of Turkmen gas to China. Bruce, again, I'm coming back to you, the last question that I asked to the, Dr. Luca. I mean, we understand Afghanistan is difficult because of the security, and we also understand that Trans-Caspian is difficult because of various reasons that we discussed. And Russia, Bruce, you said, is not anymore reliable, and China being only one direction for the Turkmen energy export is not a good idea. So in this geography, is it possible for Turkmenistan to diversify its gas export at all?
You know, diversify to the extent that they would love to? No, it's not. You know, as I said, if everything was, if it was a perfect world, Turkmenistan would be exporting its gas in all these different directions. You know, I mean, the wild card, and Luca knows that this is my view, but the wild card in all this is what happens with Iran. If the sanctions are eased sufficiently, I can easily see, and let's remember that Iran, within the last 2 months, has brought up resurrecting Nabucco. You know, I don't know if they held that out as a bargaining chip for the negotiating tables in Vienna or what, but it raises a very interesting possibility, because if the sanctions are eased to the point where you can actually export via Iran, and let's remember that Kazakhstan and Turkmenistan both have oil swap deals with Iran right now, where they can send oil to the northern, to the southern Caspian, to an Iranian port, and then Iran makes a like amount of oil available, of its oil available on the Persian Gulf, which at that point is effectively Kazakh or Turkmen oil. And the U.S. has overlooked this, saying it doesn't directly benefit Iran, so it's okay. So, if we can get to the point where people say it's okay to construct a pipeline through Iran that would connect to Turkey and to TANAP, you know, then the situation changes a great deal. And you know, right now it seems fairly unrealistic. We haven't got to that point. But that would probably be the easiest of all the options if they could actually get to that point. And then everyone comes together on this. You know, you have some Iranian involvement, and of course they're going to want to ship some of their gas because they have the second biggest amount of reserves in the world. But I can see where they would easily, you know, to accept a large volume of Turkmen gas too, remembering that the European Union needs a lot of gas. You know, the South Stream, okay, they canceled South Stream, but even when South Stream was competing with Nabucco, say, the two of them, those pipelines together would not have been enough to satisfy European Union's gas needs. So, you know, that would be, I would say that's the optimal solution, you know, but that's going to depend on a lot of things, on how the West deals with Iran. But if we did get to that point, it would change the whole situation immediately. I would hate to think that they would scrap the TAPI pipeline. I mean, it's beneficial for many, many people if they could get that pipeline to work. But in the meantime, if we got to that point, I think Turkmenistan would just throw all its cards on the, you know, down on the table and say, we're going to go with this one. We could export anywhere from 30, 50, you know, maybe 80 billion cubic meters of gas a year via a large pipeline network that ran across northern Iran into Turkey, TANAP, and then on to Europe.
Right. You know, you just hinted an interesting direction, Bruce, the Iran option. I mean, if there is any possibility for Turkmen energy export diversification, Halima Kaya, I think Turkey is already exporting electricity from Turkmenistan through Iran. Mm-hmm. Does this, the same strategy might work for gas import via Iran?
We will take electricity and the natural gas, also oil. We take Iran and Russia and Azerbaijan, and also we take the electricity in Turkmenistan. You know that Turkey is not member on EU countries, and you know, we don't have any energy resources, and we want to improve relationship between Asian countries, and we take them the electricity, also we support them to export their natural gas or electricity to Europe, and we just focus on the east side of Turkey. Mohammed.
Right. Mm-hmm. I think we could keep talking about this subject. It has been an interesting discussion. Dr. Loka from University of Glasgow, my colleague Bruce Panier, and also Halima Kaya from Ankara, Turkey. Thank you very much for being part of the discussion today.
Thanks to you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.